Welcome to Advantage Over, the only global rugby podcast to help you become a better referee. Your host today is Keith Lewis. Are you ready? Time on.
Hello there and welcome to the Advantage Over podcast. Today I'm going to answer the question, what is going on with laws at World Rugby? Well, over the last couple of weeks, we might have seen various mentions and references to law changes and law proposals coming out of a Shape of the Game conference. And that was a big meeting that was held at the end of February by World Rugby, this time in London. World Rugby meetings tend to be all over the world, depending on who can get to them and where. This one was in London, and the people who were there were representatives from all the major unions, all the sort of top tier and second tier emerging markets, emerging unions were invited to send representatives. There were people there from World Rugby's main committees, and those are the Rugby Committee, the Men's Rugby Committee, the High Performance Women's Committee, the Community Rugby Committee, the Professional Leagues Advisory Boards, Professional Game Boards. So lots and lots of stakeholders around the room. And the Community Rugby Committee. That's an important one because often people's perceptions of these things are the community voice isn't represented around the table. That was very much not the case in this case. So they all met back in February, at the end of February, beginning of March, for really 3 days of discussions around what they thought and felt the game needed to move and develop on over the next couple of years. In the past, I think World Rugby would have talked about 4-year cycles, and they were looped around the Men's Rugby World Cup. But of course, now with World Cups every 2 years, alternating between men's and women's, a 4-year cycle has now become a 2-year cycle. And in that cycle, there's always a moratorium before a World Cup. So if you just place that out over perhaps an 8 or 9 year move over timeline, there's often not a great deal of space in there to actually implement and talk about New York. So that sort of 4-year cycle concept is now gone, and World Rugby are now talking about a much more agile and flexible change program if that's what the game wants over that sort of period of time. And what was the outcome of those sort of 3 days of meetings? Well, after that, so World Rugby issued a press release, which we'll put a link to in the show notes, just talking about the meeting and the tone of the meeting and the sort of general principles that came through it, but also how the discussions and the points around the game are going to be taken forward in law and the various different options that are available to World Rugby in terms of how these laws are implemented. So I'm going to go through a bunch of those now, because I think looking at the release, there are 3, if not 4 phases of law implementation. And I think it's probably worth saying that not everything you're about to hear is likely to come into full law for everyone to referee at the end of it all. So there's a process to go through, and I'll explain through that as we go forward. So there's going to be 3 phases to this. There are 3 things that have already happened, and we'll talk through what that sort of phase of law implementation looks like. There are 3 things that are due to happen or might happen, and they're likely to come in and around the 1st of July, subject to some decisions that the World Rugby governance process needs to go through. And then there's a whole bunch of other things that might happen over the medium to long term, or may never come into play, but we'll talk through those as we go through them. So the first of those 3 things is actually a law application guideline that was issued back in the middle of March, on the 19th of March. And that was one of the reasons this was a law application guideline, because there's nothing here that's new. This is a reinforcement of current law, and under the process that World Rugby has to go through, if there's nothing new to say, it doesn't have to go through a change program, therefore it doesn't have to go through a full governance program. So law application guidelines come about once a year, every couple of years maybe, and just are a reinforcement of a particular point of law and how World Rugby wants referees to referee particular areas and how players should play particular areas. So this law application guideline covered 3 particular areas of the game. Firstly, it was around limiting the amount of caterpillar rucks in the game with a quicker use it call. And this is just a kind of a way of trying using existing law to stop the amount of caterpillar rucks that happen, mainly in the elite games. In the games that perhaps you and I referee, doesn't happen very often because the players don't have as much time. They want to keep the ball in play. They're not tactically capable of using it, kicking games effectively as perhaps those in the elite game. So it doesn't tend to happen as much, but I certainly see it in some of the games that I referee. We obviously see it a lot in elite rugby across the world, in both men's and starting to come into the women's game as well. So what they've said, that the way to try and solve this problem under using existing law is to look at law 15.17, which says when the ball has been clearly won by a team at the ruck and is available to be played, the referee's call will use it, after which the ball must be played away from the ruck within 5 seconds. So that at the moment is being refereed in a way that we've all seen these rucks happen. So we have a tackle type of ruck timer thing appears, and the ball is kind of worked its way back. Teams put more and more players on to form this caterpillar. So we might have two or three at the front and then one lining up behind another, potentially up to three and four players. It looks ridiculous. But then when it's at the back of that, and the nines probably got involved and moved it with their foot to the back of that point, once it's at the back, referees have started to then call use it. Then we have another 5 seconds-ish, usually more than that, to play away. So what law says, going back to the words that are used there, so when the ball has been clearly won by a team and is available to be played. So what the law application guideline says, that if a scrum half can go into that ruck and move it with their foot, therefore it must already have been clearly won and it's available to be played because the nine has just played it. So therefore, if those things are happening and the ruck is dead or it's over, the competition for the ball is no more, then the use it call can come significantly earlier in that process than we're seeing at the moment. So that's a kind of reinforcement of the law. It's perhaps a reinterpretation, if you like, of saying that using the words that exist and say, look, we can make that call come earlier and therefore the ball can come out, which means you've got haven't got as many players coming into it. You've got a quicker ball away, and therefore people have got more time, less time to adjust and set up the defence. And then we'd get into kick tennis off the back of that. So that's the current, that's issue one that was in the law application guideline. The second one point was around the breakfoot. There was I think there was a conversation at Shape of the Game, which kind of focused that breakfoot wasn't quite working or it, focus had gone. So there was a reminder that the breakfoot came about because player representation brought this to the table originally, that as the scrum engagement sequence was going, that there was heads on heads and shoulders in that scrum, and the pressures that were being applied there by the front rows on each other were causing what's called axial loading. That's pressure on heads and necks, which is causing more injuries. So they wanted to introduce the breakfoot, which is where the hooker has their foot positioned in the middle of the scrum when it's forming, to kind of take that pressure off the head and neck. If the breakfoot isn't there, then the pressure's on head and head, and we get that kind of loading issue. So the breakfoot was put in there. There's various conversations over the years. Obviously, it's been in there for about 18 months now in law, so we've kind of got used to it. We've kind of forgotten about it in some respects. Actual loading is still happening. So there's a reinforcement that the breakfoot exists. There has been some teams, usually those with taller hookers, where they have a breakfoot in place to start with, but then they kind of adjust their foot backwards because effectively they're taller, so they can't actually keep their foot there for long enough while they go into the crouch mode. So there was an acceptance, rightly or wrongly, that a semi-breakfoot or a half-breakfoot, that foot was coming back. And if teams did that, then the overleaning was starting to happen again. So what World Rugby have said have been really clear is that the breakfoot is there for a reason. We're just everyone's reminded about what that reason is. If there needs to be an adjustment, that is okay, because there's players need to be able to do the things in the scrum engagement sequence. But if there is an adjustment of that breakfoot, it still must be acting as a break. So reducing those pressures. So if there's an adjustment, it needs to still be visible to the referee. It needs to be acting as that break on the pressures and still being applied. So again, that needs to be seen by the referee, by match officials. Hookers need to do it. And then, of course, we need to get that strike on the ball by the hookers, which is mandatory in law. So that's issue number two. And the third element of the law application guideline, again, was a reinforcement, a reminder to everybody about water carriers. Again, there was, when it first came out, the water carriers were restricted to once or twice a half, and it was manufacturing breaks, which didn't need to happen. So there was an acceptance that didn't quite work as anticipated, and water carriers should only be coming on to the field at tries. When play is dead, we've got the conversion being taken, so that's a good time to get water on the field and get it into players. But we've started to see again, as people forget about new things, in that water carriers coming on at every opportunity, whenever there's an injury, and that's just, again, putting another stop on the game, which the game doesn't want. Trying to keep the game in flow, trying to keep the game with as fewer stoppages as possible. And those water carriers coming on when they don't need to is one of those issues that just slows player down, play down as we go through. So those are the 3 points. So the limiting the Caterpillar Rucks with a quicker use it call and a reminder that there's 5 seconds is there for a reason. And if the ball isn't played away after 5 seconds, then there should be a scrum turnover. Second point was around the reinforcement of the breakfoot. Make sure that is doing what it's supposed to do, and that's for all of us in the game. And the third one is just for elite only. So water carriers and restrictions there are only for those who play in games of squad sizes of 23 and above. So effectively elite level rugby, international rugby. For the rest of us at ground level, water carriers can come on when there is an injury and it tries. But for elite game, trying to reduce those number of stoppages and to keep water carriers only coming on when they need to do. So those three areas are the first things that have been done now under a law application guideline.
So the next thing we're going to look at are three things that might happen very near into the future. And the reason they might happen is because these ones are subject to approval by the World Rugby governance process. So there are three things that are before council that they'll decide on at their meeting in May and will probably, if they're passed, come into law in July. So there are three things within this, again, all coming back to outputs of the Shape of the Game meeting. First one was to explicitly remove the crocodile role from the game. It's something we've seen as part of the game. It's an issue that when it goes wrong, it goes horribly wrong for players. And we've seen an awful lot of long-term injuries being caused when a croc role goes wrong. For those of you who've seen Women's Six Nations in the last couple of weeks, Sarah Beckett from England got a red card when a crocodile roll that she did went wrong, and she ended up landing on the lower limb of the jackler. So both perfectly legal up to that point until she then landed on that and ended up fracturing the player's leg. We've seen other injuries where ACLs have been pulled apart and destroyed. So that's obviously long-term injuries off the back of those kinds of injuries. And it's been part of the actual common narrative around the game that crocodile rolls, whilst legal at the point that they happen, do cause player injury. And obviously player welfare is a massive concern for everybody. So that'll be one which will come out. It'll be interesting to see the wording when that is approved, but we'll obviously bring that to you when it has been. But it will obviously involve some form of a ban of rolling or twisting a player who are on their feet in the tackle area to ground. Obviously some people referee that's a ruck. But depending on the speed of that point, a bit like if you think about the line-out sack, once a pod comes down from the line-out with the ball, we allow a defender to make contact with that pod, which in theory, in a definition of a maul, creates the maul, but we allow that tackle to be made. So there's always that sort of grey area where a ruck is being formed at that point, because at the point it happens, you've got two players on their feet over the ball, but the ruck hasn't fully formed. So in that context, the jackler's got it, so they can be tackled, and it's that act of twisting and how they're removed that is what's going to be applied in that case. So crocodile roll is one thing that will probably and in all likelihood be removed from the game later the year. The other one is around offside in front of the kick. This has been a sort of common parlance around the game for a while now. It's known in some parts of the world as the DuPont law, mainly because I think he was one of the first exponents of it happening and taking advantage of what the law says. But I've seen other clips of other players doing it much before he did. So whoever owned it, either way, it's the sort of the part of the game where we've got kick tennis going on, and players know that even if they're in front of the kicker, the catcher and their actions can put that player onside, providing they're more than 10 metres away. So if somebody is in front of a kick, but more than 10 metres away from the catcher, then they know that the catcher can put them onside by running 5 metres or passing or kicking the ball. And that's kind of allowed these players to kind of be in an offside position, but benefit from being so. And that clause about a catcher running and passing a ball has been in law, and I'd look back through some very old law books, and I first found it in an 1872 law book. So these clauses have been in the game for a long, long time. But in recent years, obviously, players have looked at the law, what it says, and realised the implications of getting around it, if you like. But what the new laws will say, and it's been trialled in Super Rugby so far this year, is that those two clauses, the run 5 metres and the pass the ball, isn't
enough to put an offside player onside. So that means that the onus is then on that player to either retire or for the kicker to put that player who's in front of them of onside. So it changes the dynamics of if you remember, there's a passage of play, I think in a Bath game last season or earlier this season, where there was like 20 odd kicks from fullback to fullback as they were trying to gain a tactical advantage from kicking that ball. But it meant that everyone in front of them, between the two fullbacks, was offside all the time. And they just stood there waiting for something else to happen. That's not a good look for the game. The ball's not really in play, although arguably that is a tactical if players want to kick it back and to do that and to try and force their fullback or 10 opponent into making a mistake. I guess that's their prerogative, but it's not great for people watching who've spent a lot of money in stadia watching that happen or on TV doing that. It's certainly not something that's going to attract more people to the game. So those clauses will be put back. There was reference in the World Rugby release that the word loitering might come back, so players can't loiter in an offside position, which is what those players are doing. And that's a reference to a phrase that actually used to be in law in pre-2018, when there was a big simplification exercise. There was an explicit reference to players loitering in an offside position still being liable to sanction. That was taken out in that point, and I do wonder if that's the trigger that's caused people to say, well, actually, I can now loiter because it's not there. And that's the danger of, I guess, law change where words are removed, is that it sometimes leaves those holes. So I think this will be an opportunity to close that loophole, if you like. It will mean that players who are in front of a kick will have to be put onside by the kicker or will have to be active in putting themselves onside by retreating in the same way that we do in the sort of 10-meter law. So if the offside player is within 10 meters of the catcher, which is why I emphasized that point a second ago, they do have to get out of the way. There's nothing that anyone else can do at that in that scenario. So what will happen is that in the full game, kicking game, then those players will still have to retire or be put onside by the actions of themselves or their teammates, not by the actions of an opponent. So that's two. So we had crocodile roll will go. The offside in front of a kick issue will be cleared up. And the third one is around speeding up scrums and keeping the ball in play rather than having too many scrums. This is, perhaps, I guess, slightly controversial in some parts of the world where dominant scrum is a great tactic of the game. It is a fundamental part of the game. And there's a challenge there to the game to figure out how we keep the game for all shapes and sizes, but still allow the ball to be in play rather than going from scrum to scrum to scrum to penalty to line out to try and all that kind of stuff. So lots of dead time happens there. So the option of a scrum will be removed when a free kick is awarded. So at the moment, it's not uncommon to see scrum, collapse, scrum, free kick, another scrum, which might turn into a penalty, which might turn into a kick to the line out, and then a maul, and then a try. So I clocked one earlier in the Six Nations, which I think there was about 3 minutes of that sort of thing going on where effectively nothing happened, and the ball ended up being kicked about 2 meters away from where the scrums were all happening. So there was about 3 minutes of nothing happening apart from scrums being set and not completed. So this will change that. It'll just mean that when a free kick is awarded, that the ball will have to be tapped and go, or it can be kicked in the usual way. But it means the ball is back in play quicker rather than having those sequences. So I'm sure that will stimulate some debate, and they'll be looking at, I'm sure teams will be looking at how they take advantage of that or what options they take from a free kick now, but certainly one to be aware. So we've covered there three things that have already happened in the law application guideline. Three things that are likely to happen subject to the governance process concluding in May. And they are, if that does happen, then they will probably come into force on the 1st of July. So that's the already happened, about to happen. And the third category of things that are part of the shape of the game outputs when it comes to law are a whole bunch of conversations around either working groups that are underway to try and look at some of the other areas of the game. So lots of conversation seems to be around how we tidy up the tackle, jackal, ruck, which can be messy, can be lead to lots of penalties, can be unsure and lead to some other issues in the game. So there's lots of conversations going on there with some working groups being set up to look at that, to look at the issues around replacements and how many replacements we have in the game, and whether that can be reduced, if there are any player welfare implications of doing that, any game implications of doing that. There's a working group on terminology and phraseology. I think that's more around broadcasting and perhaps simplifying some of the terms that we use to whilst balancing out the existing participants in our game, but also how do we attract new ones? So those sorts of issues will be discussed. So there's a couple of working groups going on there that may come with other outputs. But there was also some ideas as part of that meeting, which World Rugby have said they want to trial in closed competitions or in different parts of the world to see what the implications are of doing things. And that's always a good thing. We can all sit together. We can always listen to podcasts and come up with ideas, and we can talk about what we think might happen as a result of all that. But the best way of proving that, or proving something either works or something doesn't work, is to put it into play somewhere. So he's kind of asked its membership to say, can you put forward competitions, either elite or community or age grade or men's and women's or whatever that might be, to test certain things out? And obviously, it'd be some of those unions that put ideas on the table will be the ones that will be looked at to perhaps offer a competition or a tournament or a league or something to test them out. And that will be around a bunch of things, usually around set piece and some changes to there, or perhaps around speeding up the game, which doesn't quite fit into a working group. It doesn't quite fit into an immediate law change. We wanted to have a look at some stuff to see what happens. So one idea that seems to have come out is around the maul. And at the moment, the maul is one of the only parts of the game where you kind of have two bites of the cherry before the ball needs to come out. So when a maul gets going and is stopped, it can go again before stopping a second time, at which point the ball must come out. And the feeling there was that that's overly swayed towards the attacking side and doesn't reward the defence for their actions in stopping that maul. So of course, people often say that a maul is legalised obstruction, and to get two opportunities at stopping that is probably too much to ask. So there'll be a trial somewhere in the world if somebody offers to do that, to make sure that the ball emerges from that maul when it is after its first stop, not after the second one. So that will be one to have a look at. There's a bunch of stuff around either protecting or freeing the scrum half, depending on which term you want to use. But that's around keeping the ball in play and kind of making sure that there isn't those, what I guess I would call from a refereeing perspective, those faffing areas around the back of a ruck or maul, where the ball is just coming out. So therefore the thing doesn't exist anymore. And scrum half can be either got at, scragged, played, all that kind of stuff. And it's just a friction point. It inevitably leads to something else, whether it's just a knock-on, so we have to have another scrum or things like that. So they'll probably look at sort of putting a bunch of things in there to protect the nine, to make sure that they can't be played around when the ball's coming out. In the same way that you can't dive on something as the ball is emerging, so that's been around for a while, but the same way we'll kind of protect the nine in the same way so that the ball comes out. And also we've seen in Super Rugby in an age grade around the world in some of the competitions where the scrum half off sideline at a scrum is now the tunnel and not the ball. And that just means that the ball gets out of the back of that thing and into open play more often than it doesn't. So those would be an interesting ones to look at. There are things around kicking times. Obviously, at the moment in law, we have 90 seconds for a conversion after the try is scored. We have 60 seconds after a penalty is indicated going for posts, as well as other timing issues in law around forming a scrum within 30 seconds, forming a line out, I'm using air quotes here, without delay. So there'll be a bunch of, I guess, trials will happen somewhere where that 90 seconds will come down to 60. So it's a 60 second conversion and 60 second penalty, but also perhaps putting a shot clock or a dedicated time onto that lineout issue. So without delay will in all likelihood become 30 seconds the same way it does for a scrum. And then where there's an opportunity to do so, to put a shot clock on that, to put pressure on players to get that ball back in play rather than taking lots of time. And the reason this is, I guess, a closed trial is that there may be a suggestion around player welfare around that, is that we as referees are reluctant to force front rows to speed up around forming the scrum. But there is the other side of that is that they know that, and therefore they will take every opportunity to slow play down because they know that they can. So there is a kind of balance to be had there. So it'd be interesting to see what trials look like there. There is a conversation being had around 20-minute red card replacement for the Northern Hemisphere. Obviously been trialled a lot in the Southern Hemisphere, but there hasn't really been a competition or anyone has put themselves forward to see if there is an implication in Northern competitions. It was obviously discussed at the Shape of the Game meeting. There was a desire to have a consistent approach globally, and therefore we need to either stop it everywhere or to introduce it in more places so that we can see if there is a game benefit in different parts of the world before then the long-term decisions are made about that. And of course, whenever we talk about 20-minute red card issues, the important word there is replacement. Nobody is suggesting there is going to be a 20-minute red card or a 20-minute orange card, whatever that looks like. A player shown a red card leaves the field and doesn't return. It's just the issue about whether they can be replaced by somebody else on the bench after 20 minutes of play. So there's lots of data and analysis that's been done where it's been trialled in the Southern Hemisphere, but there is a need to trial it somewhere in the Northern Hemisphere competitions to see if those conversations have shifted over time. The final one, two others that I saw on the list there were around the non-competed line out, and if that ball isn't thrown straight, should play keep going. Effectively, if you've got a team, this is often how we referee it, even at community level. If a side is never going to compete for the ball in the air, does it really matter if the ball isn't thrown perfectly straight? More often than not, we'd say, no, it doesn't matter. Of course, the argument comes back is, why wasn't it straight? Why aren't they competing? And are they not competing because it's never thrown straight? That's a slightly different issue. But as a tactic, we can all see on TV games, in games that we might officiate at, that a side just doesn't want to put themselves in the air. They want to stay on the ground, set and dominate the more setup, or free themselves to get into back line to have extra defenders out there. So in which case, why force the issue of a non-straight? So that's just something that needs to be trialled and tested to see whether it's refereeable, to see whether what the implications are. Somebody said to this before when it was discussed that surely that would just freeze the hooker to throw it straight to the 10. And that's clearly not ever going to be allowed to happen. But if there are parameters of saying it doesn't need to be straight, but needs to be within the outside shoulders of the participants of the line out, is that okay? We need to see what the wording is around what does non-compete actually mean and is defined. Is it just triggering someone up at the front? So if a second row just lifts themselves off the ground by a millimeter, is that a competition? Or do they have to fully get themselves into the air by a support to really compete for that ball? So we need to see what that wording looks like in the end and what the outcomes of a trial were. Another one that was on that list is calling a mark from a restart. I didn't quite understand this when I first saw it, but as I think about it, I can sort of see where it's coming from. At the moment, a mark can't be called from a kickoff or a restart. And that means that players who are kicking off, if they kick it long, they can then kind of set up those long, dull caterpillar rucks and get the game set, rather than being a bit more pragmatic and, I guess, strategic around how that ball is back in play. Whereas if you allow a mark from a kickoff, that might encourage the kickers to actually put it down outside the 22, which creates more of a competition for the ball. It brings more people into it, which closes up space, which brings more people into that contact point, which frees up space out the back to there to be dominant. So it's one of those, it's an interesting play. It'll be interesting to see if it ever happens, what the implications are of it happening. Again, that's one of the reasons to put these things into trial, is to just have a look at it, see what players do. And all those sorts of things. That'd be an interesting one to follow. A small change, but it might just have an interesting benefit. Becomes pretty easy. It's easy for us to referee because it can be called if they want it to. Of course, that has to be married in with the one that you can't take a scrum from a free kick as well. So you might call a mark, but you can't do what the South Africans did in the Rugby World Cup and then have a scrum from it, because that's one of the sort of double implications of two different law changes. But it does mean that they can do that if they want to tactically do that. And again, encouraging teams to restart with shorter kicks kind of brings those that competitive area back into play. So what are the implications of that? What do you think that might be the implications of that? So there's a whole bunch of stuff that's going on. Only three things right now you need to worry about. And of those three things, of course, two of them are predominantly in the elite game. So there's really only one thing that's changed for everybody, and that isn't a change. It's just a reinforcement of the breakfoot. There will undoubtedly be more to come on all this. depending on the outcomes of those council meet, that World Rugby Council meeting in May, and therefore any law change that will happen from the 1st of July. And then certainly as you're watching rugby over the summer, see what competitions might be trialing new things. I'm sure that'll be part of the communications that are around all those competitions. See what you think of those changes. It'd be great to have that discussion as part of our rugbyreferee.net stuff. If you see it, if you've refereed it, if you're part of that, see what it's like to referee. When you're watching it, have a think about whether you can referee that on the ground. That's what I do. So I'm a community referee, just like most of you listening to. So we need to make sure that we can referee these things and what the implications we will face when we are out there on our parks on a weekend or a midweek. So we need to have those lenses, and we need to put those, have that lens back into World Rugby. So by all means, share that with me. Come into the Facebook group and have a conversation about it. Share your thoughts, because all the thoughts that more people have might just bring out something that no one has considered, no one thought of, that can be used to influence the wordings around the implementation, around the management of those decisions, again, how we referee the game. So yeah, come over to the Facebook group. We've got over 4,000 people in there now, which is fantastic. Some really, really good conversations about all this kind of stuff, but also help and support for you and your refereeing from your refereeing peers in that group. We've got people all over the world of all experiences, of all backgrounds, of all calibers. So it's fantastic group. So if you go to refsquad.com, that will auto bounce you into the Facebook group. Or if you look for Rugby Referee Community on Facebook, I'm hoping that will come up. We only let referees into there and match officials. So there are some qualifying questions that I go through and manually then add you to the group, because I want to make sure that it's a safe space for referees. There shouldn't be any non-match officials in there. And if they do squirrel their way in, I kick them out. If they don't fulfill with the sort of the ethos of that group, I want it to be a safe space for as many people as we can, because we often don't have that support. Refereeing can be quite isolating. So having that community around us is really important. So I hope that's been a helpful wander through all those things. It's certainly a fascinating part of the conversation, and it'd be great to hear what your thoughts are. So do come on over and let us know what you think.
We hope you've enjoyed the content that we brought to you this week on the Advantage Over podcast. We'd really appreciate your likes, rates, reviews, wherever it was that you found this episode. So please do head there, leave us a review, say some nice things, and we really do appreciate those. It does help more people find us and gives us a nice little feedback loop as we go into the next episode. But what we'd also really like is if you could tell your referee friends, colleagues, your referee community about this podcast. We are the only rugby referee podcast out there. So over time, your comments, your introductions to the podcast really helps us build a better refereeing community and brings this podcast to more ears around the world. Also, if you've got any feedback, we'd love to hear from you. So please either drop us an email at ref@rugbyreferee.net. Or you can find us across all the social networks at Rugby Referee Net, or you can come across to our Facebook group. We've got a really active referee community with over 4,000 members in all over the world. So if you head to refsquad.com, that will bounce you into the right place, answer a few questions, and we'll let you in. So that really is it for today. So let's call Advantage Over.